Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Radio Free Republic of Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Republic of Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. Blogger Atabek Satori, activist Mir Aziz Bazarov, and a politician, Professor Khidr Nazar Allahkulov, they are few among the growing list of people who are currently in trouble in Uzbekistan. Some of them have been sentenced to lengthy prison terms, and some are currently being persecuted as we speak. They all share one thing in common, that they are concerned about the direction of the country and they share their opinions in public. The number of such incidents is increasing as Uzbekistan is headed to presidential elections where the current president plans to seek a second term in office. So in this episode of Majlis podcast, we will try to make sense of what's happening in Uzbekistan, what do these developments mean to the reform process, and where things might be headed in the coming weeks and months. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Mira Redman, Senior Central Asia Researcher at the Human Rights Watch, Umida Niyazova, the Director of Uzbek Forum for Human Rights, Alisher Sadiq, the Director of Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Uzbek Service, Ozotlik Radiusi, and Bruce Panier, the Editor of Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today on this very important conversation. So Sattari, Bazarov, and Allahkulov are obviously few among the growing list of people in Uzbekistan who have been recently facing trouble. Well, let's start with Satori's case. And Alisher, could you jump in here? So he's sentenced to 6.5 years for what?
His sentence is kind of one of those cases where charges appear and then multiply as it goes. So first charges were the fraud case related to mobile phone that he, you know, asked for mobile phone. If you go into very detail, you will go into deep woods. It's never something obvious. It's always something made up and fabricated. But eventually, you need to look into the reasons why it's happening to this particular person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have other bloggers at the same level,
right,
as Satori, but in Tashkent, let's say. So in Surkhandarya, you know, authorities are still kind of living the past and they're still catching up, maybe. And the local authority is still powerful there. So it's, for them, it's very easy to stage something, to make him breach some laws. But the funny part and the most interesting part of it is that if you look at the biggest tragedy, like Sardoba dam burst, that's the biggest tragedy, you know, and 17 people were on trial. And one of them got like 5 years, but many were just released. Or another case where a brother was murdered, I mean, one man was murdered by another who was his brother, and he received like 5 years in jail. The contrast and what is being discussed now, whatever Satori has done, it's definitely not for 6.5 years.
So, Alisher, is there anything particular that caught your attention that Satori was involved just ahead of he got in trouble with the authorities? Was there anything particular that he was working on, any particular investigation that he might be involved on? I mean, is there anything unusuality that caught your attention leading to his fate, what ended up to be like 6.5 years in prison?
These guys are not at that level, you know, to do like some substantial investigation. Or these are just like bloggers, have their followers, they talk, they criticize. So everything is just limited to this type of work. You know, like they see something's going on and just criticize on air, as you may kind of see it happening across the board. But as I said, he's far away from capital, where things are moving faster, and bloggers there enjoy a little bit more freedom than in this faraway province. But again, he had some issues with local government, you know, local authorities. He was criticizing them. And again, whatever he says, it's what he says, right? And if you go through his YouTube channel and his ideas, in many cases, probably, you don't agree with them. But it's okay. because he was very super critical about opposition himself. So about some members of opposition.
So what you are saying is that his location to be outside of Tashkent, like remote places where he is, might have contributed in a fate that he ultimately ended up facing. Is it the way I should understand it?
It is, yeah. But again, the way the modus operandi of Uzbek security services is always kind of finding a way how to charge you. It's very difficult to escape it, but it's still possible. So whenever you receive something from someone, some money or someone comes to you and says that he would want to give you a favor if you cover that, you know, maybe for these young guys like Satori, it's very easy to fall into that trap. So that can be recorded and used against you. So they're not very much trained for these type of situations.
Interesting. You know, just to add another dimension to this, though, I'm just thinking that authorities in Uzbekistan are so self-cautious about their international reputation, and I'm sure they knew that possible backlash of decisions like this. Obviously, the decision outraged the activists. One of the local journalists, Nikita Makarenko, has criticized the decision by saying that this was absolutely crazy and unwarranted. How you describe, Mira, the situation, the type of troubles that Satori is going through?
I think it's important to recognize the heavy-handedness of the sentencing and put it into the context of other things that are happening in Uzbekistan at the same time, because his case is one of a number of setbacks that free speech is experiencing in Uzbekistan right now. So I think they need to be taken hand in hand. You know, we're not just looking only at Atabek Satori's case when we talk about backstepping in terms of what the government has promised when it pledged to uphold free speech. We're also talking about, and I'm sure that you're planning to get to these other cases, but you know, Miraziz Bazarov's case, we're talking about also legislative changes that were adopted. There's also the upcoming presidential election and the environment for raising critical issues, pertinent issues at a local level, at a national level. And so, you know, Atabek Satori's sentencing is also, it's alarming because of the signal that it sends that criticism is not going to be tolerated and that there will be serious repercussions. The chilling effect that a sentence like a 6.5 year prison sentence has when, you know, the charges from the get-go were dubious, when his lawyer is saying that, you know, there wasn't material evidence of wrongdoing presented in court, you know, that all is very, very concerning and alarming, and it should rattle Uzbekistan's partners that are keen on seeing Uzbekistan continue with reforms and not, you know, experience this stagnation or the setbacks that we're seeing right now in Uzbekistan.
Yeah, of course, you know, while activists were outraged with Satori's case, as you mentioned, Mira, the authorities began circling around another blogger and activist, Miraziz Bazarov. It's particularly troubling to see that as teachers and in some cases so-called journalists, local journalists are jumping in to condemn him. Of course, we know the background, everything surreal about his case. So, Umida, I know you guys have been following Bazarov's case. So what's latest about him as we speak?
Before to go to Bazarov case, I just wanted to tell also that I was following Atabek Satori's case, and I read the investigation materials, and I can say that it was never presented any evidences of his so-called crime. So, and he nevertheless, so he was charged on extortion and slander. And I think that the conviction of Atabek Satori for 6 and 5 years on clearly fabricated charges is the, like, authorities are telling us that the game of democracy is over and that the critics will be punished again. And I think that it's also important to say that, like, since the new president came to the power, he released human rights defenders, journalists, and other political prisoners whom his predecessor Islam Karimov had kept in prison up to for 2 decades.
Right.
So, some political prisoners affiliated with religious organizations are still in prison meantime, but for the past several years, since Mirziyoyev came to power, Uzbekistan remained a country where not a single human rights activist or journalist was imprisoned for a long time. So this is the first case. When Mirziyoyev released the journalists and human rights activists, this was one of the real positive factors for which the Mirziyoyev received kind of strong international approval. But the recent events points to a really negative trend.
About Bazarov, though, Umida, is there anything different with his case when compared with Sattari?
Bazarov blamed on slander, and he's under the house arrest.
So Sattari is blamed for extortion, and Bazarov is slander. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's where he stands now?
Now it's an investigation, and Bazarov is under the house arrest. What is also important about the Bazarov case? In general, there's a real national security threat in Uzbekistan, in addition to kind of the unemployment and corruption, which is the threat of religious extremism, I think. Mm. It's like we are reliving in the events in the earlier 1990s, when, like, kind of thanks to the Gorbachev's liberalizations, influential religious groups emerged and who began to advocate different policies, such as introduction even of Sharia law. And in recent months, I would say destructive voices have been heard, particularly amid calls to decriminalize the same-sex relationship in Uzbekistan. And we have been hearing calls to violence and then the brutal beating of Bazarov, who spoke out for the gay rights.
And nothing happens to those who called for violence. I guess that's what I remember from our previous discussions.
No, nothing happens to them. Actually, they've been found as so-called victims because it's them who wrote the statement to the investigation office.
Interesting.
For slandering the national security.
Very interesting. So now, as we speak, he's in house arrest, I guess. So what's the next step in his case?
It's hard to say. We see this very negative trend. And actually, this year, in my opinion, so Mirziyoyev's government is kind of as a crossroads. Maybe he must decide either to become Uzbekistan will become a more open society and let bloggers, independent activists to speak out, for example, register independent groups, or to return to repressions. And these cases of Atabek and Bazarov, these cases kind of showing us what Uzbek government is going to do.
Right. Bruce, earlier you also shared some information about Bazarov's case. Is there anything particular that draws your attention, the way things are developing around this man? Especially these teachers kind of railing around and some bloggers criticizing him. They are not a good sign. Is it unique?
It's less unique all the time, that's for sure. Before the bloggers are something relatively new, but they seem to have this pack of pro-government bloggers that follow around a lot of these kind of trials and attack perceived government opponents. There was a bunch of these bloggers that were down at the Sattari trial, but there's a bunch that are attacking, of course, Bazarov at the same time, too. I think the thing that stands out for me most in the Bazarov case is just that the people that attacked him are actually, the ones that are filing a case against him. They weren't investigated for assault, but in the meantime, they say that they've been slandered because he said they assaulted him, which somebody clearly did. It's just like totally upside down from the way it's supposed to work, and of course Bazarov just aired his views about same-sex relations and stuff. He's not homosexual. He just put that out there, and this kind of response and the orchestrated response where it's clear that the government has a hand in this or is supporting groups that are attacking him. It's a chilling message for the whole country.
So while these two guys are in trouble, we were earlier talking about Professor Khidr Nazar Allakulov, the founder of the recently established Justice and Development Party. Just not to confuse, this party has nothing to do, I guess, with the ruling Justice and Development Party in Turkey. So he's also in trouble and accused of petty hooliganism. I guess this is what the charge is, Alisher. I mean, it's everything kind of comes together is interesting. I mean, on one hand, you have the blogger is being, persecuted, and then activist, the LGBTQ rights activist is persecuted, and then you also have this political activist, the man who's trying to establish a party and run for the office. This guy also gets in trouble. So what's going on with the Allah Kulov?
Yeah, this is, what all of these cases are representing is the misleading message of some sort of changes that happened in Uzbekistan. So all of these guys, they were misled with the statements that by the president himself that it is now a free society, that you can say whatever you want to say, you can criticize, I'm behind you, I will stand by you. Also, president talked about opposition parties, that he's not against them, that he would welcome opposition party if it is homegrown, if it's not coming from abroad or somewhere. Allah Kulov definitely representing this kind of a homegrown opposition party, let's say. He has never been abroad, I believe, and he never escaped or was in exile for anything. So that's definitely this guy whom President Mirziyoyev would welcome if you believe his statements. But all of these things, they were in very early stages, and deception brought them these problems. You still need to understand that that was a dictatorial authoritarian regime of Karimov, and it moved somewhere forward, but it's too early to say that, we now trust him, let's do opposition party. That game's cannot be played. It's still dangerous place for bloggers, for journalists, for opposition parties, for gay rights activists, for religious freedom activists, for journalists, critical, real, solid journalism. Right. So it's still a dangerous place for this type of activity. Mm-hmm. And all what we're seeing is that regime is just sending another signal that don't believe that too much, what we are saying. Mm. But it's not for you, it's just for
international audience. Last week,
international audience.
Jump in here real quick with something.
Sure.
Certain, correct me if I'm wrong. Allah Kulov is not charged with hooliganism. That's what they wanted to charge him with.
Oh,
they
believe
he's charged with slander, actually. And it was all because there was some guys waiting outside his place that wanted to start a fight with him, and he wouldn't fight with them, and it was on film. But apparently the guys that wanted to start the fight with him are now the plaintiffs, saying that they've been slandered because he said they wanted to start a fight with him. So he's actually up for slander and not for hooliganism, I believe. Is that correct, Alisher?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Again, I know all these cases. Mm-hmm. Let's say Satori, there were 9 charges. Allah Kulov, 2 charges. Let's say Bazarov, now you have 28 people suing a case against him. He's accused of also slander and provoking disorder and incitement. Mm-hmm. We can talk about this in detail, all these criminal, what charges are brought, who brought them, but I just wanted our discussion not to go that way, because it's all just a fabricated, made up things. It can be fraud, it can be bribe, it can be whatever. Right. It's a modus operandi of security services to bring you to some sort of to end your activity.
Various form and source of intimidations that the authorities are trying to use against.
Yeah, now new tactics here is very interesting. Hmm. What they're using now. They're using these hostile bloggers, like some guys, these bloggers who are so critical about everything, but they're also critical about opposition. So they sort of support president, and at the same time, they act like they're independent. But it's all kind of a new type of, influencers on the government or the security services are trying to use proxies in this way. So this kind of a unknown group of women who appear everywhere.
Yeah.
And the new joke is, even if you send, a picket or the protest, Uzbek protest to Mars, some guys, some women will appear, you know, even there to stop your protest.
Yeah, we are seeing these kind of trends in some other neighboring countries too. Like the other day, we were talking about Pakistan, just these kind of new trends. It's also very much the case in that country. Like, you know, as soon as you start speaking about the prime minister's policies, you know, you will face with this unknown sort of bloggers or activists on Twitter starts attacking you. So they just appear from somewhere. It's a very interesting trend, of course.
The good thing for us, let's say, as journalists, to investigate and to see how these guys are being paid, for example, for these services, you know, how these guys are manipulated, or whether they are agents, like real agents of security services. That also the possibility.
Yeah, maybe in some cases, maybe whether they are real. You know, that was a question during our discussion on Pakistan the other day. So it's very interesting development. On one hand, though, okay, you are seeing these very dirty kind of response by the authorities against activists, bloggers, or opposition members. But in the meantime, in some cases, these intimidations are not working. I guess the opposition activists, Bruce, let me bring you in here back. The opposition activist Jahangir Atajanov has just returned to Uzbekistan. He seems as fired up as he was and wants to restore the opposition party in exile, ERK party, and he's not given up aspiration to run for the president. So we remember, like, we spoke about him, like, a couple of months ago, we had a discussion about Uzbekistan, that he was in Turkey. So as soon as he announced his aspiration to run for the president, a couple of guys showed up in his office and started to threatening him. But again, it looks like he's not intimidated, but, you know, there are people like him who's not giving up. Of course, again, the thing is that even if there would be a kind of free and independent election, either Allah Kulub nor Tijanov, none of them might have a chance to win the election. But again, still, despite all these intimidations, or despite all these harassments, they are there. You know, they want to keep the good fight. So what stands out to you in the case of Atajanov?
As far as Jahangir goes, that's, you know, okay, he returned, right? But he's like a celebrity more than a politician. So I don't know if he represents the same kind of threat as somebody like Alakulov, although even though Alakulov is an academic, but still he's got some more political savvy, I would imagine. You know, credit that he returned from Turkey. We'll see what kind of latitude he's given once he's there and starts moving. You know, I mean, all the events that we've just been talking about suggest he won't get very far with this, you know. But like I said, if he's willing to come back and go and give it a go and see what he can get out of it, you know, more power to him. And certainly I'll be watching and rooting for him to be a candidate. You know, again, I think if the government, if they're looking for somebody who's a likely opposition candidate against Mirziyoyev, who has like really no chance of winning at all, and can't represent much of a threat, then maybe this guy is the one, as opposed to Alakulov. But that remains to be seen. He might be a lot more politically savvy than I'm giving him credit for.
I also wondered, Alisher, your thoughts. What stands out to you in the case of Atajanov? I mean, the fact that he returned to Uzbekistan and now he wants to go for it. I mean, what do you see happening here with him?
Yeah, I mean, we need to see and wait. You know, it's Atajanov is under immense pressure now. You know that, and I guess it's even probably worse when your family members and his elderly father and mother now involved in this pressure. You know, we don't know all the details, but what we know is that his parents appeared on social media. Right. Abandoning him, saying we don't have a son like you, we sort of curse you, and imagine how bad it is, you know. It's probably even worse. So now his parents are really kind of putting a lot of pressure
on him. You think his parents are doing this under pressure?
You know, it's we never know. But these elderly people are obviously extremely stressed out, if you see the video. And Uzbek social media is kind of distributing that across, and it's everywhere. And then, you know, what can you say? It's it's the way of he has chosen. And he himself openly told us during the interview that he was deceived by president's statements about freedom and the opportunities and possibilities of political activity. But now he has no way back, because the things that he also said, he said, you know, and he joined the ERK Democratic Party, which is completely, you know, it's unheard of. You know, they were basically considered as the worst enemies and nearly terrorist organization in Uzbekistan. And he came back. Yeah. We need to sit, relax, and watch what's going to happen next. I bet there will be somebody coming saying that Otajonov took a lot of money from him and then and never returned or something like that. Be like fraud again and the thing that we're talking.
Yeah, he just returned. You know, it's so revealing. Alisher, it's good that you mentioned that. Ozotlik had an interview with him. I would recommend everyone to go and read that interview on Ozotlik's website. So while all these are happening, Uzbekistan is headed to a presidential election later this year. So the timing of these crackdowns is obviously intriguing, but as some people were saying, that these tactics are, you know, also exposing the facade around the reform process that the Uzbek authorities have spent so much resources, money, and energy to build in outside of Uzbekistan. So who is doing it? And what to expect in a couple of months to come before the election? Let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Mira Ritman, Senior Central Asia Researcher at the Human Rights Watch, Umide Niyazabad, the Director of Uzbek Forum for Human Rights, Alisher Sadiq, the Director of Harafiyar's Uzbek Service, Ozotlik Radyosu, and Bruce Panier, the Editor of Radio Free Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Radio Liberty's Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the latest round of crackdowns on activists in Uzbekistan. Now, so we speak about Bazarov, Sattori, Allakulov, and Atajanov and the situation that they are in. Umida, is there any other particular name or any particular recent developments that caught your eyes and worth flagging here?
I wanted to talk about the registration of independent organizations, but before, just also wanted to tell that from the very beginning, Mirziyoyev's reform were aimed to improving the only economy, and I think everyone understood that. And although Uzbekistan has always remained an authoritarian country, there was still some hope that the authorities would allow the activity of civil society organizations which are distinct from political activity. So that is, hardly anyone has any illusions that an opposition political party will be registered in Uzbekistan or independent candidate will be allowed to participate in this year's presidential election. This is not going to happen anyway. But there was some hope that that on some level, independent civil rights, human rights activity will be allowed. But unfortunately, so we are now facing the open opposition to the formation or registration of really independent groups, whether it's a group of volunteers who want to register an NGO or group of activists who wants to help people to protect their labor rights. And specifically, we have been observing the efforts of our partner in Karakal, Pakistan, Azim Bharat Niyazov, who had been trying to register a small regional NGO for more than a year and a half. And so firstly, so the registration procedure for NGO is intentionally complicated. And from what we are seeing, the Minister of Justice is specifically looking for reasons to refuse registration of independent NGOs. And the registration of NGOs, I think, is the first step in the development of civil society in Uzbekistan. So Mirziyoyev gave out the very kind of generous promises of this freedom of speech, the fight against corruption, and many people, and including myself, believe these promises to some extent. And unfortunately, it seems that these promises are broken.
Very, very interesting. Yeah, I also wanted to discuss a bit about the NGO registration process, but I guess we have, you know, to devote a special episode on this. Simply, there are so much other things to talk about. I know you were talking about, Umid, a very relevant experience that your colleagues are going through in Karakal, Pakistan, and elsewhere. So let's do that a little bit later in some other episode. And I'm sure we are going to come back to Uzbekistan as the country is headed to the presidential election. So, Amira, I guess in one of our recent conversation on this platform, we spoke about the regulation involving online media. I think you just mentioned that. So which could literally put anyone in trouble who do not share the government line of thinking and post their opinion online. Anything else that comes to your mind that we are missing in this conversation in terms of any recent developments, any other names that we need to flag before we go towards the conclusion of the discussion?
Well, I actually also wanted to say something very briefly about NGO registration. So I appreciate that maybe it will come up in another Majlis discussion. One point I want to make is that the registration requirements and how burdensome they are, it shouldn't be a means of gatekeeping who can carry out their activities and who can't. Mm-hmm. And that goes, you know, also for questions around political opposition organizing before the upcoming presidential elections. You know, it's the Ministry of Justice should act in good faith and should look for ways to register groups, not look for ways to deny them registration. Mm-hmm. To your point or question about legislative developments, I mean, that could also occupy a whole conversation, yeah, because there's been so many promises of reformed criminal code, a new law on religion, a new NGO code, a peaceful assemblies law, and we've seen all of these pieces of legislation stall at various times over the last years and not move forward. The one exception being that the draft religion law, was just passed in the lower house of parliament. But it's a very intransparent process about how law is adopted in Uzbekistan, because sometimes it takes months or years, and then other times, like recent changes to the criminal code that extended criminalization of insulting the president to online platforms as well as prohibiting the distribution of information expressed in an indecent form that reflects disrespect for society, the state, and state symbols, which of course is very problematic, because who gets to decide what is indecent and what is disrespect for society? And because that's a very vague concept and notion, and is, you know, it speaks to individual sensitivities, it's not clear in law what that means. And so anybody really could find themselves in targeted by authorities if that suits the authorities. So that kind of legislation, when it gets adopted very quickly without any conversation or oversight overnight almost, you know, that's very problematic.
Right.
If I can just say one last thing, is to go back to something Alisher said, is that I think this issue of the distance between the reform promises of the government under President Mirziyoyev and what we're seeing in reality right now, you know, that's really coming to the forefront. And Uzbekistan watchers are taking note. You know, I think the diplomatic community realizes that the reform process has stagnated. Certainly human rights organizations are trying to call attention to this. Media organizations that are working. And for, you know, the government that has spent so much energies on cultivating this image, you know, this pre-election period is a time not to crack down and to rein in free speech and freedom of association and the like, but really to show, you know, if this reform process was genuine and meaningful, this is a time that we would see those reforms come to fruition. And unfortunately, and particularly for somebody like Atabek Satoy, who's now sitting in prison for 6.5 years, that has real life implications for human rights activists, bloggers, and others. And, you know, I would hope that stops. You know, we don't want to see backtracking right now. We want to see Uzbekistan move towards those reforms that were promised, right, not away from them.
Right. Bruce, perhaps this needs a little bit political analysis of yours. Like in the past months, you remember, we had several discussions about Uzbekistan and the type of reforms, quote-unquote reforms, that President Mirziyoyev has promised to international community that he wants to make in Uzbekistan. You know, of course, he got, you know, lots of credit for what he said. But what some people were also claiming, the fact that, you know, these kind of society decisions that is taking place, has taken place in Uzbekistan over the past couple of years, despite President's like big announcements of reform, freedoms, and all these things. So whenever we would see these kind of cases against the bloggers, journalists, or maybe someone detained, someone harassed, people would also say that, okay, this is the action of those local authorities that they are not aware of what President's direction is about Uzbekistan or what the president wants. Now, after these recent cases about the bloggers case, for example, Satori's case, it becomes such an international topic. Or Bazarov's case, for example, it is such an international topic. Of course, it's going to be highlighted even more with the political activities that are going to heat up before the election. About the Allah Kulov's case, I mean, these are international topics. I'm just guessing how come a local authority can take a decision like that without the knowledge of president. So by now, can we say that these things are happening with the knowledge of the president? Or with the blessing of president, or still we can think that, oh, maybe these are the actions of local authorities.
No. I always had my doubts that any of these were the actions of local authorities in a lot of cases anyway, way before this happened. There is such a thing as coincidence, but not when it happens, when so many examples of it happen so quickly together that you just can't. I have no idea why he picked now to do this. You know, like Mira said, this seems to be like the worst time to do this. If he was going to, you would have thought he would have loosened things up a little bit before elections, even if he had clamped down last year or something. I don't know. You know, maybe the economy is doing a lot worse than he thought because of the pandemic, you know, and so he wasn't able to push through economic reforms. But you have to see this as part of a pattern. There is no other way to look at this than this is like, you know, an all-out offensive on the government to clear the field before they have elections. You know, as we've heard, this is what they've done with Satari, what they've done with Bazarov, you know, and what they're doing with Alakulov, and we'll see about Alimjanov, how that works out too. But they're sending a message to everybody about what is not permissible anymore. You know, in the run-up to elections.
So you think all this is happening because that we are headed to the elections?
That is one. I'm going to have to give some credit to the Uzbek services report on the mansion as having sparked some of this, too. You know, it was only a few days before they released the report that Mirziyoyev was sitting there saying, telling journalists, I stand behind you. And he... You know, the whole situation went around in the opposite direction after this report came out. And I think it made the authorities aware of what some of the criticism that they weren't going to be able to escape from. You know, especially if they let the media situation develop the way it was, where people could ask questions. Mirziyoyev himself said, you need to report about corruption. You know, and then all of a sudden, here's an example that he's the center of the corruption. And then, you know, everything just shifted into high gear all of a sudden. And they just forgot about all those promises about reforms and, you know, and freedom of speech and, you know, opening up more space for the media and stuff and clamped everything down because, you know, obviously it's going to look bad. He's going to get elected. And people say, yeah, you got elected. And in the meantime, you have this great place to live in, out of town with, an artificial reservoir that you've created, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's the elections coming up. And I think it spooked them that all of a sudden they got caught, the top guy, basically shifting money over for his own uses.
I know it's so difficult job to try to read authorities' brain, you know, but if someone would try to do that with the background and knowledge, Alisha, you might be the person. So when you look into these actions from the authorities' point of view, why they do what they do, why they started doing what they started doing?
I think still for me, all these cases are different. I have a reservation about Satori's case. I still believe that in the last moment, President Mirziyoyev will just say how bad was it and he will criticize it, and he will be released and president be praised. Because the group that is kind of defending Satori is pro-government bloggers. They are defending Satori. Of course, they're making it in, it is bad prosecutor, it is bad local authorities. But in that case, I think in Satori's case will be different. In Bazarov's case, it's completely something else, because what he's fighting for, the gay rights, is very toxic issue in Uzbekistan. And Bazarov also touched state security service by mocking them. So that there is an element of revenge. With the Alakulov's case and the Atajanov case, that's for me represents more kind of a serious issue. And I just wanted to go back to your question where you said they probably will not win Mirziyoyev if there is free and fair election. That is not true. I mean, Mirziyoyev is not very much popular in Uzbekistan, as you may see it from here. So inside Uzbekistan, a good politician with a good, solid rhetoric, with the access to television and media and with registration and with all legitimate, let's say, things that allows him to run for president, that person may easily win Mirziyoyev. So, and he's very afraid of it. And that's why that will never happen. They want to stay there not only next term, but they're now discussing how they're going to continue even further. Here, yeah, with the oppositions, with the open political activity, we see that it's going to be tough.
Okay, very, very, very interesting analysis there. Thank you very much, Alisher. I think we need to wrap up the discussion right here. But just a very, very final thought, though. You know, we kind of agreed, okay, maybe Alisher had a sort of a different opinion about some of those cases. In the case of crackdowns against those political activists, we think that this might has to do with the upcoming elections. If that is the case, for example, election is happening in a couple of months. So what to expect between now and the election day? I will take each of your thoughts briefly about this, and then with that, we will end the conversation. So let's start with you, Mira.
Well, the signals are not reassuring, given what's happened. I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much, but I can imagine with this trend that we're not going to see a liberalizing of the space for free speech and NGO activity and opposition activity. Quite the opposite. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that, and I think that it is the responsibility of the authorities in Uzbekistan in the lead up to presidential election to respect free speech and to stop targeting bloggers and allow political opposition. And I think I just take this moment to urge Uzbekistan partners to remind Uzbekistan of the fact that election or not, that reforms for them to be meaningful, Uzbekistan can't backtrack and stagnate on those promises, but needs to move forward. And I hope that they continue to urge Uzbekistan to do so.
Okay. Let's take, Omida, your opinion on that. I'm just trying to read your brain as to where you will be looking at between now and the election day in terms of the possible upcoming developments.
So I just wanted to agree with Alisher that people are tired from all these promises, and discontent is growing because of lawlessness, poverty, corruption. And this discontent can be silent by a repressive machine, as it was under Karimov. But alternatively, so the government could acknowledge the problems, view critics, so including bloggers and activists, as kind of keepers of the forest who can help get rid of corrupt officials and raise awareness about the issues the country is facing.
But you are not expecting that to happen, I guess.
No, I think that situation will be worsening.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bruce, let me take your thoughts, kind of final thoughts in terms of where your eyes are going to be between now and the election day. Any particular area that you will be looking at to determine where we are headed from here?
Just to watch how they treat these genuine opposition candidates, the people that want a president. We all know, figure they're not going to let them run. But what means they use to exclude them from the elections will be interesting, and I suppose a lot pretty sad to watch too. You can see it coming, but how are they going to do this and try to make this look like it was some kind of legitimate decision, or do they care anymore? That's what I'll be watching.
Mm-hmm. Alisha, your thoughts?
I would want to look into Mirziyoyev's personality here to understand how he plans to move forward. You know, the guy has no vision for the development, like no long-term vision. That is very big, very big problem for a leader. And also, without vision and listening to some circle of his friends, whatever they will tell him, that's the way he want to continue. So he's a person without vision and a populist person. It's I think the very interesting mixture, and he's very I mean, he's populist. He likes to say things and without, he thinks that is pretty enough just to say things. You know, then what happens is that propaganda machine will be reactivated now and put into highest gear. Journalists, you know, even abroad, those who are paid will start singing his music to his music. And that will be pretty kind of a smooth, I think, transition into his next term. I don't feel like it's gonna be like problematic kind of thing.
But you're also saying, Alisher, that, you know, the fact that if there would be, I'm just saying in the context of supposed, there supposed to be a free elections, he might not have a chance to win the elections. Uzbek people are tired. So people in Uzbekistan are kind of, you know, understanding what's at play here, that he is just all the talk but not action.
No, there's no group in Uzbekistan that is kind of opposing Mirziyoyev in a more kind of a rigorous way. So the people we're talking, Alakulov, these are pretty kind of elderly people. They have no idea what is, let's say, social media is, what is, you know. They believe is just, we should do something. So what they're doing is just something. And I don't think there is a big hurdle ahead of Mirziyoyev at this moment, especially since he, for Karimov, the problem was always a huge Muslim community, desperate, which was under pressure. And Mirziyoyev is riding on them. He's letting things happen with the Islamization. So that's why he's popular for these things.
For this group.
And people also are not ready to for some actions, you know, for some protests, and it's not at that boiling level just yet. But my point is that if there is a political process and opposition, real opposition parties are allowed, in that case it could be a trouble.
Is there anything you will be looking at in the family members? They have been very much in the spotlight over the past, you know, couple of months. And
no, according to our information, the family members are just a little bit told not to be around and not to be so much visible for they are on social media, on Facebook, continue with this populist game. So basically, he's already too much valuable for his friends. And of course, his circle is very much interested to keep him in power.
Okay. Very interesting, very interesting. Thank you very much, Alisher Siddiq, the director of Radio Free Radio Liberties Uzbek service, Ozotlik. So with this, we have to conclude the discussion. Also, big thanks goes to Amira Ritman, Senior Central Asia Researcher at the Human Rights Watch, Umida Niyazova, the Director of Uzbek Forum for Human Rights, and Bruce Panier, the author of Radio Free Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Again, thank you very much, colleagues, for your time in touch today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Radio Liberty's Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.